Welcome to the Every Brain Matters podcast. It's just pot. What's the problem? This is part four of the Brenn-Spacher trial. Viewer discretion is advised. The views and opinions on this podcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Every Brain Matters community. Okay, we welcome you to the Every Brain Matters podcast. It's just pot. What's the problem? This is part four of the Brenn-Spacher trial. Brenn experienced cannabis-induced psychosis, which led to her being violent and ending the life of a friend of hers, Chad Amelia. This is a hard conversation to have today, and we are grateful for everyone who is willing to do that. So we have our special guest here today with my fellow advocates. So let me introduce Kevin Rasmussen, and we're going to call him Raz for short. And we'll have him introduce himself in just a minute here, but he's a good friend of Brenn's. He dated her for about 3 years, so we'll learn more about how he knows her and how he is very passionate about this issue and what happened to Brenn. And then we have Dr. Christy Brown, who's a fellow national advocate who educates on the harms of marijuana, especially cannabis-induced psychosis. So welcome, Dr. Brown. And then we have Heidi Anderson Swan, the author of A Night in Jail. She is also a national advocate who educates on the harms of marijuana. But we want the viewers to know that Christy and Heidi are here for personal experiences too. And then they're very educated on the science. So Raz, thank you for joining us here today. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you met Brenn.
Hi, I'm from Chicago. Where Brenn's from. I was in the Marine Corps Infantry stationed at 29 Palms, California. And for the past 11 years, I've been a self-employed personal trainer. I met Brenn through a mutual friend in December 2014. She was home on winter break from grad school. So, you know, got to hang out with her a couple times during that break and, you know, felt like we had some kind of connection. So next time she was home, she let me know. And that's actually when I asked her out on a date and, you know, kind of just went from there.
Great. Well, thank you for your service to our country. Why don't you talk a little bit about your relationship with Brenn? Were you all dating and how long did you date for?
We dated for about 3 years, I think just shy by a couple months. We, you know, the first bit of our relationship, she was in grad school. And you know, when I first met her, she did make it very clear that she was prioritizing her education and family. So I knew like, all right, I'm going to see her when I get a chance. But, you know, slowly we started being able to kind of further our relationship. And I would see her when she came home, or I would visit her at school a couple of times. She showed me around her campus. She even did a hearing check on me because we both thought that maybe I was losing a little bit of hearing. But unfortunately for me, my hearing was fine, and I just needed to be better at paying attention. Once she came home after she graduated, we actually went on our first trip together. And that's actually when we discovered we loved traveling and hiking and just being outdoors. Neither of us really got much of a chance to do that before. We went to Washington State because her aunt lives in Northern Washington and my mom lives in Southern Washington. So we kind of split our trip up half and half. That trip is actually the first time Brenn has ever smoked. I have smoked a couple times before that, and Brenn knew that. She wanted to try it, you know, allowed for friends smoke, but she didn't necessarily just want to be at some like house party and try it. You know, she knew we were going to be out camping and thought that'd be a pretty cool place to try it for the first time. So since we were both inexperienced, we went to a smoke shop, I think somewhere in like Battleground, Washington. And we were talking with the people there and letting them know, like, hey, we're very inexperienced, especially, you know, Bryn, she's never smoked before. So we told them, like, you know, this is her first time. I've only smoked a couple of times. We'd like to get something pretty low dose. The people there were very informative. They gave us a blend because we told them we'd be smoking at night. We didn't want to get wound up. The guy described, can't remember what the difference of sativa and indica is, but he said the one that's more of an upper would be more like having a shot of espresso. That was his description. And then the other one would kind of just could make you pass out. We were like, oh, you know what? Maybe a combination of that. And that's what he suggested.
So that's interesting. So Bryn, when you first met Bryn, she was in grad school and she graduated as an audiologist, right? And
correct.
Then you all you all love to travel and hike. So you took this trip to Washington State, where you're in a marijuana shop there that's regulated by the state of Washington. And in this, I guess they call them bud tenders, was describing, you guys were having this conversation about using marijuana, not very experienced at it, and what to expect and wanting a low dose. I'm curious, during that conversation, did anybody in that shop tell you there's a risk of developing a psychosis or having an adverse effect?
No, not at all. And obviously, neither of us found out that was even a thing until well after the incident happened, probably a couple years.
Wow.
After.
I am really shocked that he compared it to espresso, having a shot of espresso.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and of course, we don't know any better. We're just going into it thinking like, you know, this is going to be a good experience, like from what we've seen in, you know, entertainment and the media and our own friends describing it. We thought, you know, what could go wrong? You know, like we're going to probably get the munchies, get the giggles. And that's exactly what happened. But, you know, more into the smoke shop, they actually, told us though, even though they didn't give us any warnings, they did say, take it slow. They rolled us the joint actually. And then put the extra amount in a bag and sold us some stuff that, you know, like a grinder and a couple other wraps, I guess you'd call them.
Okay.
Or paper. They did tell us, okay, take a hit, sit for a little while, see how it affects you. And that's what we did. So we were actually out camping next to a waterfall, you know, pretty cool first spot to smoke. But Bryn took, I believe, only one hit. I took one at first, took another one only because I have smoked before. So I knew that I'd be fine smoking more than one hit. And, you know, we're kind of sitting around talking and Bryn said something like, hey, I'm not sure if I'm high. And then I look over at the bag of chips she's holding, which is a family size bag of chips, mm-hmm. and the whole thing's almost gone. Mm-hmm. So I point out, I'm like, well, you almost finished that whole bag of chips just by yourself. And we both sat there for a second and then just started laughing. Thought it was so funny. That's exactly what we expected. And, obviously it's pretty funny to see, you know, especially a more petite woman kind of go to town on a whole bag of chips. And after that, we just kind of kept laughing for a little while. Kept talking, sat around the fire that we made, and then put that out and went to sleep. So actually the next day we woke up and we kind of talked about the experience. Both agreed that, that's exactly what we expected. But really it wasn't for us. I don't think, at least for me, I don't like smoking because I don't like kind of losing the ability to kind of control myself.
So you don't like that impaired feeling and
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same as drinking, like it's hard to describe, especially because I haven't smoked in probably 6 or 7 years, so I really can't remember it too well. Yeah, that was our first experience with marijuana, and we actually, the next 2 years we were together, we
you never
never
smoked.
smoked again.
So you didn't have any adverse effects at that moment. Bryn didn't show any signs of psychosis. All she did was eat a bag of chips. And I think that's quite interesting. And maybe Christy and Heidi, you want to ask anything about the situation because it's such a normalized part of our culture that, when we go and educate out in the communities, they say, the worst thing that's going to happen to you if you use marijuana is that you're going to giggle and eat a lot of food, eat a bag of chips. So I find that quite ironic. Christy and Heidi, do you want to add anything to the conversation?
I want to say one thing that I noticed from the trial is that Bryn said that she didn't like smoking because she didn't smoking marijuana because she didn't like smoking because you have to hold it in your lungs and it was very harsh. And so that's another reason why she said she didn't like it. So I don't know if Raz noticed that or if she said anything to him about that, but that was my experience when I tried to smoke marijuana in the 60s. Like, I've never smoked ever. So, smoking anything is not for me. Did Bryn ever say anything about that?
No, not at the time. I mean, that was the first and only time we smoked together. I know for myself, I don't like that just because I have asthma and I don't like smoking anything. Even like I've tried hookah and, I didn't enjoy that either. But no, that specific time, she never mentioned anything. And we didn't really talk too much into detail about any of her other times after that she smoked when she was in California.
But when with both of you being so active and liking to hike and travel, I know when you smoke marijuana, they call it stoned because you just kind of sit there like a stone. You're not really wanting to be active, engaging. You kind of go into your head. So I can see why some people don't like that feeling. But it is quite interesting, even at that point, you all weren't aware that there was a risk of psychosis, even with a few puffs off a joint. So that is what I think the majority of people understand about this drug. So it's good to share that, and that most there people do have harmless experiences with it. Heidi, did you want to add anything?
I do. So how many hits do you think you each had off the joint?
If I remember correctly, she had one, maybe two at the most. I remember, I think I had two. I mean, if she did take two, I probably did three. Just, I know I smoked more than her. But yeah, I believe it was one. But she definitely got high. But
From
just
one hit.
the
Yeah.
uncontrollable laughing and giggles, and we just started bringing up dumb stuff and just laughing the whole time. So
This was a joint. It wasn't a bong hit. So that's a big difference from this time to the incident that created the psychosis.
correct. Yeah.
And then tell us, is there a difference, do you think, between having a hit from a toke up a joint or having a hit up a bong? How would you be able to speak to that at all?
I've personally never smoked out of a bong. I have a lot of friends that do smoke, some almost daily, others, you know, probably weekly. And I have talked to them about the whole situation and bongs, and pretty much all of them, even my best friend that smokes just about every day, he said he will not touch a bong because how much more intense or easily you'll get high or smoke too much. From my knowledge, like just researching a little bit and talking to my friends that do smoke and are very experienced. And I'm going to throw out just numbers. I know this isn't backed by science or anything, but just to give a little bit of an idea, how everyone's described it to me is taking one hit out of a joint and then one hit out of a bong, a regular hit out of a bong, which is the first hit that Bryn had, as described, it seemed like a regular hit where the smoke was a normal amount. That's probably about five times the amount of smoke that you will inhale. And then, you know, something that was done in this case is the second hit, which was described as being, I believe, what way more intense is how he described it to Bryn, where you couldn't see through it. It looked like cloudy, like milk custard look to it. That is about 10 times stronger, probably more than taking one normal hit out of a bong, and then you're relating that to one hit out of a joint. You could get a lot more smoke out of one hit, especially with how large this bong that was used was.
Yeah, each bong might have different size chambers for it. So, yeah.
Right. So, and from what we saw in pictures, even this was a very large bong. And the second hit was what they call stacked. The hits were stacked. So it was just like taking multiple hits out of what would be a regular hit of a bong, and then even multiplied above what a regular hit out of a joint was. You could probably easily argue that the second hit Bryn took was about as much as you would get out of a whole joint.
And can I just interject something here? And I probably should have earlier. And for viewers who are not familiar with the trial, the reason that Raz is telling this story is because this was brought up in the courtroom about how Bryn got high for the first time with Raz in 2016. And so the prosecution was saying, oh, you're familiar with getting high, aren't you? You know, you got high with your ex-boyfriend. You know, she just created this narrative around Bryn that she was a party girl and that she was very familiar with marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. And she used that as a part of the case to prosecute her. But text messages to him were read aloud. So he was definitely someone, you know, hearing about Raz was one of the people in her life that we in the courtroom heard about. And so it is an interesting story to hear about their first time using and then what the experience was like for Raz, and then what it was like, most importantly, for Bryn, which was a pretty, you know, harmless experience. So what would ever give her the indication that anything else would happen? And actually in Illinois right now, there is there's a DA, and I can't remember his name. It's from McHale County.
Keneally. His name is Keneally.
Keneally. But warning labels, right? Put on marijuana
posting products? In the pot shops that warn about psychosis. So when Braz was telling us about the pot shop in Washington State, where they don't say anything about the negative side effects. Well, now the first county in our country is mandating that they put these warnings inside the pot shops, correct? On the walls, so the customers can see it.
Just in that one county in Illinois, it's not a statewide, but when Raz and Bryn first used marijuana together, this was probably 2015 or 16. I'm not even sure. So it was a long time ago. Correct.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that was when California was just legalizing marijuana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the rest of your relationship with Bryn, the next couple of years, I think you said your relationship where you dated her was about 3 years. Did you guys never used marijuana after that? And you just enjoyed traveling and hiking and doing the things you guys like to do. And did she show any signs of any kind of mental illness or anything?
Absolutely not. Bryn was a very carefree, charismatic, just very nice person. Anyone we would meet, you know, and I think this is why we got along so well. Anytime we would meet people when we'd be out anywhere, right away we'd become friends because she's so including, you know. So very easy to talk to. I've easily done more than probably a handful of things that could have easily upset her. And I just thought it was always remarkable how, you know, well, we would just talk about whatever happened and get over it. There was no screaming. There was no yelling. There was no, you know, signs of me going, whoa, this chick's crazy. You know, like all my friends really liked her. My family liked her, but they still do. My family and my friends are still in touch with her, and still welcome her around, you know.
So like any relationship has its ups and downs. And so what you're describing when you guys had some conflict in the or contention in the relationship, there was no dramatic or violent outbursts or anything that happened between you and her.
Right. And I mean, even vice versa, you know, if there was anything ever that I brought to attention that she was doing that, you know, maybe I was like, hey, like, you know, why is this happening or whatever, you know, she would receive it well. You know, she wouldn't get defensive and start getting angry or anything, just very normal person.
Okay. Before we wrap up this first section, I just want to say, Raz, what else do you want us to know about Bryn during that time when you were dating her?
Bryn was, while we dated and even after, you know, really loved the outdoors and started loving the outdoors even more after we got our huskies, I believe. So her dog, Aria, was brought up in the trial for her stabbing her dog as well during everything, which she did survive. We got our dogs together. They were from the same litter. So my dog, Koga, he just turned 6 in October, so we would have gotten them 6 years ago. Loved dogs. Like I said, love being outdoors. Whenever we would travel, our idea of a vacation would be going to a state we haven't been to before, exploring as much as we could in about a week, camping at different spots every time. We would kind of move from spot to spot to spot. Loved trying new food. She just was a great person to always be around. She was very supportive of me, being self-employed and, you know, sometimes struggling with my job, always supported me, always supported her friends. She was just a real big people person and loved everyone, you know.
And she has hearing loss herself, right? Does she wear hearing aids?
Correct. So when Bryn was born, there was a complication at birth, and she had to be rushed to a children's hospital by helicopter. And they had to give her a shot that actually, I don't know if I'm describing this the exact way it went, but basically dissolved hair follicles in her ear. I don't think they're called hair follicles, but people will get what I'm saying. And that kind of ruined her ability to pick up high frequency sounds. So they didn't realize until she was 4 years old that she needed hearing aids. And her mom actually did an incredible job with speech. And, you know, she had a woman, I don't know if she wants to be mentioned, but, you know, a speech pathologist that would help her with her speech. So you couldn't even really tell that she was hard of hearing. But yeah, you went through that her whole life. You know, at first when she was having them, when she was very young, she felt different. She was the only one that had hearing aids all through, I believe, elementary school, middle school. And then I think, if I remember correctly, maybe one person in her high school had hearing aids. You know, and incredibly, she goes to college and decides she wants to become an audiologist, because that's just the kind of person she is, where she wanted to help people that went through the same struggles she did. And who's better to tell you things will be okay and you'll get through it, and that, you know, it's not something to be ashamed of, than someone that shares the same thing with you, you know, having hearing loss herself. So that's, sure. I mean, to me, you know, that's just amazing that she chose that path.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Does Heidi or Christy, do you want to add anything to this first part of the podcast?
Well, I don't know if it would be about the first part of the podcast, but I think a lot of what happened in the trial was that, you know, Raz is saying there's no signs of mental illness, but the prosecutor wanted to portray Bryn as someone who was very used to being intoxicated and liked to be intoxicated, because she wanted to convict her on this charge of voluntary intoxication. And it came right out of left field that she started using all these text messages and, you know, portraying Bryn as someone who liked to drink all the time. And that was, you know, quite a shock, because it hadn't been talked about at all in the trial until the prosecutor started cross-examining Bryn. And I was just wondering if Raz, you know, what was your reaction to what was going on in the trial at that point? What can you tell us about Bryn and intoxication? Because these are some of the things that all these people who listen to the trial, they create these assumptions, and they don't know who Bryn was, but you knew who Bryn was. So tell us who Bryn was in terms of the, you know, what the prosecutor was trying to imply there.
Right. So I believe she got to that that assumption because of text messages she sent to her friends. I believe text messages were read that were sent to myself, two of her friends, Chad. And I think they found a couple texts of her saying, "I'm drunk," which, you know, out of all the text messages that they went through, which was her entire phone, that these were the worst things that they found. You know, a few text messages of her telling her friends, "I'm drunk." She drank the same as any other regular young 20-year-old. We would drink with friends, of course. But you know, she never drove drunk. If she ever needed to, she would crash at her friends' houses. You know, she did not have a bad relationship with alcohol. Nothing came out while she was drinking. It was just your typical experience of being in your 20s and drinking with friends. But she was by no means a party animal, or I think she called her a party gal.
Yeah.
So she graduated one of the top schools for audiology in the nation, the top of her class, with honors. You know, you're not going to get through that being a party gal. I mean, I'm not a party person. If she was, I don't think we would have even worked out. You know, so heard it was really hard just sitting there and hearing her describe her as this person, because the picture she was painting was not Brynn, you know. And for someone to try to kind of paint a picture of someone's whole life through text messages, that's a pretty hard thing to do. And especially if you don't know the person, you don't know the tone that things were, how they were being said. You just kind of read it however you want. You could create your own context. You could create your own tone. And that's kind of what the jury got stuck with. They got to hear Audrey, Nafsinger?
Yeah. Nafsinger, yeah.
Yeah. They got to, which I'll just call her Audrey because
okay.
that last name's kind of hard to say. You know, they got to listen to her sit there and just make everything so dramatic and, you know, sound however she wanted it to. And knowing her, receiving her text, knowing her sense of humor, it was just, I felt sick hearing all this. You know, part of me just wanted to just get up and just yell because it was so frustrating hearing that.
Well, the other thing that she tried to establish is that Brynn is a very dominant person in a relationship, just by capital letters in some of her texts. And I was very skeptical about that because I, you know, knew a lot about the case, but I don't know about the jury. But she was trying to do that in order to say that Brynn was not, you know, pressured by Chad, or she didn't feel intimidated by him, or, you know, anything like that, that she was the leader in the relationship. And so since you were in a relationship with Brynn, I think you haven't given that impression, but maybe you could speak to that, you know, aspect of it, that Audrey was trying to leave in the mind of the jury so that they would convict on this charge.
What happened with these text messages where she sees capital letters and she automatically thinks, you know, she's this bossy woman that's, you know, just yelling at Chad and has control over him, when that couldn't be further from the truth. Brynn has three brothers and they all have great sense of humor. They're all just hilarious. But they can be very sarcastic and exaggerate. And that's where Brynn got a lot of her sense of humor. You know, for example, you know, there might be a time where she got to my house and she's waiting outside for me to come down and I'm taking too long getting ready or something. And she's like, "Hey, I'm here." And I would see a text, and all of a sudden, you know, I might look down and there's another one in all caps, like, "Hurry up," you know, and I know she's kidding, you know, she's not in a hurry. Or I'll say, "One sec, I'm almost done," you know, and she might be like, "Hurry up, we need to go get food," in all caps. But I know she's joking. She's just trying to show like her excitement that she wants to go get food. But I never felt actually pressured by it because I know her sense of humor. So the fact that she took that and she flipped it to meet her agenda, or what, you know, hearing her flip it that way. And I believe the text messages were her saying, "Why aren't you at the dog park yet, Chad?" And that's how she read it. Like, "Why aren't you at the dog park yet, Chad?" When that's not how it would have been said. And I guarantee you, Chad knew that as well. If they're hanging out and they're friends, you know, they're going to know each other's sense of humor a little bit already. I guarantee they've joked around like this in person, which you won't get through text messages. You know, there's times too when you could be talking to someone in person, having a conversation with them, and then finish it up in text messages. So you're only getting part of the conversation. You're not getting the whole context. And the fact that, again, she was trying to paint Brynn as this bossy party gal just through text messages is insane. You know,
yeah. I mean, I when I heard her saying that in the court, I was like, man, is she tone deaf? She completely missed the message altogether. But then I realized, of course, she wasn't tone deaf at all. She was intentionally spinning it. Intentionally, right. Like you said, making it fit her agenda, her narrative. Same with the bossy thing. That was a funny thing. No, it's bossy. Same with you really advocate well for yourself, don't you? Is another thing that she took a positive part of Brynn's character, which is she's hard of hearing and she needed to, you know, take care of herself and do extra things to overcome her disability. And now she wants to help others overcome their disabilities. And so she takes that as, well, look at you advocating for yourself. It's like, what is she supposed to do? You know, but this was intentional on her part to make the jury also look at her askew. I would assume look at her and go, yeah, what else does she have going on? Because maybe she's devious, you know, and that's the other thing that she was saying about Brynn when she was in the hospital and in the intensive care unit, and she was coming out of her psychosis and remembering what happened. And she's saying, oh yeah, you're advocating for yourself there, weren't you? Coming up with, oh, how am I going to get out of this that just happened? You know, she did a good job sewing together these pieces that would make people question Brynn. You know, clearly she was successful in doing so, because it became the narrative, I assume, that the jury went with.
You know, I was there for the first week of the trial and most of the third week, which was the last week. And the whole time I'm sitting there thinking, where's this woman going with any of this? Like, this is all just ridiculous. Like, and then as the trial was going on, I started realizing, oh, that's what she's doing. Like, she's, and for what she's hired to do and what she's supposed to do, she did a good job of dirtying her up and painting her as someone that she is not even close to being. And just like you said, even saying that she came up with this whole elaborate plan just after waking up in the hospital, after being sedated with tubes in her throat and in her neck and, you know, being on all kinds of pain meds and just coming out of probably the worst, you know, psychotic episode that you could possibly have, you know, to the point where you killed someone that you enjoyed spending time with, one of your friends, stabbed your own dog that you love more than anything, and then yourself in the neck over and over and over. You know, we'll go more into detail, I'm sure, later about that, but so I don't get sidetracked. You know, her waking up after all of that and thinking, oh, you know, by the statutes in California and by what I know of the law surrounding this, if I say that I didn't want to smoke, but he made me. I'll get off the hook. Like, that's what I'm going to go with. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's and also, let me.
She was thinking of.
Can I interject something here? Because some people say, oh, she wasn't really stabbing herself that hard. Those are, you know, surface wounds. But she almost died. And she almost like cut through her jugular vein. They did surgery on her that night. And her life was saved by the deputies. And I think that that needs to be highlighted. Yeah. She was.
Well, I think you have to say the deputies tried to get the knife out of her hand by tasing her, what is it, 4 times. And then they had to take the stick and hit her 9 times on the wrist and what broke her wrist.
A metal baton.
Like just barely stabbing herself. I mean, she was you know, totally in psychosis at that time. And you could just tell from looking at the video, which, you know, we don't want to go into that much because it was really, really so distressing to see what was going on.
Well, let's get back to Raz's story too. And we'll talk about that in just a minute here. Cause there's some details that both of you just shared, all three of you just shared, that I didn't even know. And I thought I knew a lot of details about this trial. So let's get to that. But Raz, you dated Bren for a while, then you all decided to break up because your lives were going on different paths. And then she ended up moving from Illinois to California. Is that correct?
Through, you know, after she moved to California, we dated for probably another month. And I actually did visit her out there once. And I think we both kind of just realized that we weren't going to be able to do the long distance. You know, she's just starting off this new job as a doctor, moved, you know, halfway across the country. And I think we both are the type of person that if we're going to be in relationship, we need, you know, the person there with them. So, yeah, we broke up shortly after she moved out there in November of 2017. And we tried to stay friends. I mean, nothing really happened that made us stop talking, but we did stop talking around New Year's going into 2018. Just decided that would be best for us. I think I was having a hard time moving on. I think I kept, we kept talking, you know, we were staying friends, we were having a good time. And I think the feeling just kept coming back for me, and it was hard for both of us to move on. So we decided, you know, let's just stop talking. We could maybe down the road start talking again. And that's what happened. Beginning of April, she was actually going skydiving with her friends, and she FaceTimed me before she went the night before, because, you know, she was worried, you know, if anything were to happen while skydiving, she wanted to make sure that we talked again. And you know, of course, like, I thought that was kind of silly, but I did enjoy the talk. We talked for probably about 5 hours, just catching up on everything she's been up to, everything I've been up to. You know, like, I took another trip to Washington, and I think she saw that on social media, and she was telling me, and she had Aria out there for a little bit of that time. She couldn't have Aria at first because of the first family she lived with. They didn't allow dogs. So when she moved in with the second family, she was allowed to have Aria. But yeah, just catching me up on all the different things she did. You know, sounded like she was having a good time exploring California. There's a lot to do out there. So, you know, I was a little jealous, you know, being out in Illinois and not really having anything. But
yeah, California's cool. So do you remember the moment when you got the phone call about the incident with Bren? And this is where we can talk more about that. Do you remember somebody calling you? Was it Bren? Or how did you find out that Bren had a psychotic episode and had killed her friend, Chad, Amelia?
How do you forget something like that? You know, the actual same person that introduced us to each other was the one that called me. And I remember it was, Memorial Day weekend, it was a nice day out. I was outside walking my dog, and all of a sudden, a friend of ours calls me and just starts going like, "Hey, how are you? How are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, I'm doing all right. Like, how about you? I haven't talked to her in a while." And she's like, How are you taking the news about Bryn?" And I'm like, "What do you mean? Like, I thought she might have been talking about that, because she had it planned. She was going to come to Illinois, I think a week after Memorial Day weekend." And I'm just like, "Well, what do you mean?" And she just broke the news to me. And, obviously when it was first reported in the news, there wasn't very many details. And obviously there was a lot of misinformation going on. So she basically just says, Bryn is in the hospital. She's like, "Oh, she killed her boyfriend and stabbed herself." And of course, to me, like, since we've been talking, in between April and the incident, a lot of confusion, but the first thing is just, I was angry at her because I'm like, "Well, why are you joking around about this? Like, impossible." And then when I realized she was serious, I just told her like I had to go, and I hung up and started looking up online anything I could find, and just reading the story, I was still in disbelief. And this was over 5 years ago, so I'm not remembering exactly what I read. I do remember it being very hard to read and just being in shock and disbelief. But right away, I thought to myself, something else happened. This isn't the whole story. And I kept looking up for more information every day. Like, did she get drugged? Like, because in my mind, that's the only situation that this could have happened, or if her life was in danger. And, it just unbelievable. I knew just hearing about it for the first time that there had to be more to it, which we didn't know for a while that there was in fact more to it.
And at that point, did you reach out to Bryn, or what were your thought processes? Were you going to call her? Were you going to text her?
Yeah, actually the weird thing is I was texting her before the weekend, just say, "Hey, hope you have a great weekend." And then just filled in real quick. "Hey, this is what I'm going to be up to. Hope you have a good time." And then I didn't hear back from her. So, I was just like, "Hey, hope everything's all right. Hope you're having a good time. Can't wait to catch up with you when you come home." And, still no response. And, that's when a couple of days later, I found out from her friend what happened. But right away, it's like, what do you do? Like, do you try reaching out to the family? Like, I decided, just to give them their space. But a bunch of me and her friends, we all started texting each other, and just trying to figure out, what do we do? Like, how do we be there for her? Like, and I think I found out that you could send her messages through like a website while she was being detained. So I just wrote her a letter. What?
So you were texting her just a few days prior to the incident where she had cannabis-induced psychosis, and then
Right.
You had texted her a few days after that, but didn't know what was going on until a friend had called you and told you about it. Is that correct?
Right. And that was probably a couple days after. I don't know who found out first. I don't know how anyone got the news, but there was an article by the Acorn, who they've been awful this whole time. It's clear what their stance was on everything, and they didn't budge the entire time. But yeah, I found out about it, and then I found out that I could message her. So I sent everyone the website. Everyone started kind of just writing her, just, hey, listen, like, you know, we know that there was more to this. Like, there's, we know you would never do this in a million years. We're here for you, you know, any way we can be. And just kind of like weren't asking questions. We were just trying to one way be like, listen, we know who you are. We know this wasn't your doing on your, on, you know, your own power. And just again, yeah, trying to let her know that we're still there for her.
And did you guys know it was a cannabis induced psychotic event at that point? And did she reach back out? Was she able to communicate back to you guys?
No, I mean, it was a while, I'm talking years, until I think anyone realized really that, like, her first defense lawyer, which was, I think, what's the
public defender?
Yeah, public defender, who was awful right away. He's just, I mean, and that's what they do. They try to just get people to take a plea deal. That's mm-hmm. what he was trying to do with her. Wasn't even really looking into anything. He wasn't contacting experts. So she was stuck with this guy for a while, who was doing nothing. And then finally, when he said, like, hey, let's take a plea deal, that's when they're like, we're getting rid of this guy. So they got Schwartz and Goldstein, who have been absolutely amazing. They contacted all the right people. They found out from experts that this was, in fact, medically induced psychosis. And the footage is proof enough.
Do you remember when you got that information that they said, yes, it was a drug and it was marijuana or cannabis? Do you remember that moment when somebody told you that? And what were your thoughts at that point?
You know, and I've been trying to piece, like, make the timeline a little bit more clear to myself, but I'm not sure when I found out or when anyone found out. But I remember hearing what it is and just saying, oh yeah, that sounds about right. You know, that's what it had to have been. And then just researching it and getting a little bit of a better understanding and just realizing, like, I did not know this was a thing. I did not know it was possible to go through psychosis or any kind of, you know, I know that people get, like, paranoid, but I was like, oh, that's got to be the extent of it, because that's all you ever hear about. So the fact that they were saying, you know, medically induced psychosis and what that is, it just, you know, totally surprised me that, again, that this is even a thing, that it exists, that that's a possibility. Because I've never heard of it before.
Never heard of it. And, you know, I can speak for my own personal, and maybe Heidi and Christy want to talk here too. I could feel the emotion from you that you got, you know, you were in the first part of when we started talking about, you were very concerned how they were portraying Bryn, and that was not who you knew her to be. She was not this party girl. And then finding out that a horrific incident that was induced by cannabis happened with her, and knowing that, I mean, your demeanor has changed, you know, to a sadness of a concern. And it takes me back to the point where I used to have, when I saw my loved ones go through this, this isn't who they are. This would have never happened. They wouldn't have had these type of behaviors if it wasn't induced by the marijuana. Now, I'm not excusing the fact that the O'Mealy family lost their son in a horrific way, and not minimizing that actually happened, or excusing the behavior, you know, of that time where Bryn did become psychotic and violent. And what I'm trying to say is that, you know, the Every Brain Matters community takes a neutral stance on this and is providing this very important conversation to raise awareness, because we know what happened to Bryn that night. They keep saying it's rare, and it's really not that rare, especially nowadays, now that we've industrialized this drug, THC, and put it in all these different kind of forms to make it look appealing and attractive and harmless. So I just want to recognize that, Raz, what you're doing today, I know, is not easy. And I can tell you, even processing and talking about it, that it takes a lot of courage to be here and have this conversation. So I just want to say thank you again for this. Do you remember when you first spoke to Bryn after this? Do you remember, were you able to talk to her on the phone or start texting her at some point?
Well, I know after we all wrote to her, a lot of people kind of got together and we started a GoFundMe, which actually got taken down because they don't allow you to have GoFundMes for bail. But we started just a separate fund so that we could send money directly to the family. And, you know, I think it was after she got bailed out, you know, her mom went there as soon as she found out about everything. Her mom was out there, and she was able to get her after she got bailed out. I think at some point she got a new phone because they confiscated hers. And I think eventually, you know, I just got a text saying, hey, thank you so much for the letter. You know, it means a lot that everyone wrote me, and, you know, basically like, we'll be in touch soon. And I think, and I, you know, understandably so, you know, she needed some time to herself with her family to kind of just take in everything that happened and try to make sense of it, which, you know, you really can't.
Well, I think one thing we might want to interject here is that after she was coming out of the psychosis, she was writing these notes, mm-hmm. and she had to be interviewed several times by detectives. And we, you know, heard one of those interviews, and from the very beginning, she was saying that she didn't want to take that second hit in one of her notes. And so I think she was somehow connecting the marijuana with what happened to her, even though she might not have known the medical diagnosis or anything like that. But she was describing, you know, the fact that she was not aware of what was happening, you know, while this was going on, and that she was having these delusions and hallucinations, and those were all in her description right from the very beginning. So she didn't change her story or anything like that. She just, you know, described a psychotic episode with whatever, you know, triggered that psychotic episode, you know, but the only thing that could have triggered it was the marijuana that she took. And that's why it's so important to tell her story, because so many people don't believe that this can happen, or they'll attribute it to something else, or she must have had something else in her system, but they tested her, nothing else was in her system, or Chad's, there was nothing else in the drugs that they found. So this is all really good, you know, evidence that it was the marijuana. It wasn't anything other than that, those that we can point to that triggered this in her. So, you know, I think even though it took a while to figure out exactly what it was, and you all had faith in her, But from the very beginning, she was, you know, describing what was psychotic, what was psychosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it didn't really, she wasn't able to piece things too well or together too well until she saw the, she had to watch the footage over and over and over, you know, just to kind of prepare herself so that she could keep it together in court, which we saw was still hard to do. And, you know, I don't know how anyone could. I personally didn't watch the footage because I can't watch someone that I care about do that to themselves, or, you know, see anything that, you know, unfortunately happened that night. You know, obviously everything is very tragic about what happened. You know, there was, I don't think, I mean, no one had any idea that this could happen or that this would happen. You know, they were friends smoking together and something happened that, you know, people aren't educated about, that there's nothing posted in anywhere in California. It's not on the bottles of marijuana that you purchased. It's not on, well, actually it was, it did mention something on the illicit site that Chad purchased from, which he was, did purchase. I don't think they were able to prove for this specific time, but he does frequently purchase OG Kush, which I'm sure when you have the numbers of potency, but I know it's in like the around the mid 30s. So,
which I have to be honest, I didn't know they had 30% in the flower, especially in 2018.
Right.
And I was like, I mean, whoa. 31.8%.
Yeah. And 30% was established, so the viewers know that's 30% of THC in a marijuana flower product. So the actual
grappled up green
plant. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. When Aubrey and I made a video together last year, and we were walking around saying, you know, in the flower today, we call it 20%. we give a very conservative estimate, but that in 2018, that was 31.8. That's a lot. And yeah, they didn't establish that that was exactly what she had, but that was the most recent record of what Chad had purchased. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, you as her friend, if you had ever heard about cannabis induced psychosis and you did find out that she was dating someone who was a regular marijuana user, maybe you would have cautioned her. I don't know, said, oh, you know what? I heard it's not quite so safe all the time. Maybe you shouldn't go out with him. It may have been misconstrued, you know, that here is the old boyfriend saying who she shouldn't go out with right, today. Sure. That would just be with any friend, yeah. I think. I mean, this case has probably changed how you feel about, you know, the regular use of marijuana, that there are harms. There are risks. It's not the harmless thing everybody says, you know?
Right, absolutely. I mean, if I have any friends, you know, that, you know, have mentioned that they're going to try it, or that, you know, or if any of my friends in the future do mention like, hey, I'm going to try smoking for the first time. Yeah, of course, I'm going to warn everyone, you know, is I would never want this to happen to any of my friends. And if I ever, even before knowing any of this, I could tell you that if I ever had an experience where I was smoking with someone and they had a episode where they didn't react to the marijuana normally, you know, and I'm going to segue a little bit here into something that did happen. I know if one of my friends that I'm smoking with, they freak out, I'm surely not going to offer that same stuff to another one of my friends 2 weeks later. Which, and the reason I'm bringing this up is 2 weeks before this incident, Chad was smoking with one of his roommates, Vinny. And the owner of the apartment Do you remind me of his name?
Steve Bruckner.
Yeah, Steve Bruckner. They were both there preparing this bong, the same bong that Bryn smoked out of. They're preparing this bong for his roommate, Vinny, who has never smoked before. And again, who knows if it's because it was too much that they gave him, or if it was just that strain that something was up with it, or if he just, that's how he reacts to marijuana. Either way, he smoked out of this same bong 2 weeks before the incident with Bryn, and he had a horrible reaction to it, where he said the walls were moving like the ocean, and that his, that Chad's face was floating all around the room. And then he started thinking he was going to die. So he was asking them to please take him to the hospital or call 911. And he was freaking out so bad that he started saying that he would get naked and run outside if they wouldn't take him. But, you know, they told him to just calm down. And fortunately for him, that's as bad as it got. And he kind of slept it off. Although I believe this happened at night. And then 4 p.m. the next day, he was still high from how much they gave him. Because even if you have a bad reaction to this, I mean, this is just from my slight understanding, you know, you could have a bad reaction to it. But if you were given a lot of it, that's what's going to keep you high for a long time. So he wasn't given just a little bit. You would think someone would maybe learn their lesson or be more cautious about doing that, especially with Bryn being a novice as well, having only smoked very small quantities anytime she did smoke. Because she mentioned the first time she ever smoked, which was with me, was the only other time she's ever been high. Any other time she smoked before would just be out of a joint. And then I think one other time out of the bong with Chad, which she took a normal hit and didn't feel anything. Just like with the night this all happened, where she took one normal hit out of the bong, didn't feel anything, said, "Hey, I'm not really feeling anything." Didn't say, "I want more," but Chad then said, "Let me go make this more intense for you."
Goes, yeah, what does that mean?
Right, exactly. What does that mean?
And I asked somebody that this weekend. I said, "What does that mean to you?" And he goes, "You pass out, right? You eat more and you pass out."
Right. I mean,
that's what everybody thinks.
Where would anyone that has only had a good experience with marijuana, if I'm thinking like, "Oh, you're gonna make this stronger," and I'm gonna think, "Oh, okay, I'm just gonna laugh more. I'm gonna get even more munchies, or I might just be a little bit more relaxed." Mm-hmm. So, real quick, going back, which is what happened to me my first time ever smoking. Like I mentioned, I was in the military. You can't smoke. Before being in the military, I was always very anti-drugs, never touched marijuana. And I got out, and some of my best friends smoke. I was hanging out with them one night, and they asked if I wanted to. And I didn't have the best experience in the military with mental health. So I thought, "Oh, you know what? This might help relax me." And unfortunately, that night, my friends thought it'd be funny to mess with me and tell me that, "Hey, this is your first time smoking. You have to smoke a ton to feel anything." So I'm sitting there and I'm taking the biggest drags that I possibly can, probably six times. And I just sat there, what they described to me, for over an hour, not moving at all. We were watching Blue Mountain State, and part of the intro to the show, someone's like drawing with pencil on a piece of paper the mountains. And I didn't know that they paused it midway jaw in the mountains, and I just sat there staring at it, like analyzing it for over an hour, not saying a single word, not moving, not blinking. And then they said, eventually I looked over at him. I said, like, why did this episode stop playing? And then I just went back to staring at it back again. Like, you know, it's kind of sick how some people think this is playful, to that it's harmless. Nothing can happen. It's just weed.
So there is this kind of disconnect between people knowing that you can have a, what he called bad, Vinny called it a bad trip on marijuana, and people's enthusiasm for marijuana as being this wonderful, harmless drug that, you know, what's the problem? It's not going to cause any bad reactions. So they know that they have bad reactions, but they think that they're time limited. You just get over them, I think. And that's, but, you know, Bryn could have had this bad reaction that Vinny had. Why would Chad want her to have that by making it more intense? That's something that we'll never know. There's certain mysteries about this whole incident that we can't really understand. Like, you know, what exactly happened during that time, because Bryn doesn't remember it either. You know.
Right. And right. Also the fact that he, as Raz pointed out, this happened just a couple weeks before with Vinny. And so him providing the same similar-ish anyway, drug to Bryn, a woman on a date, that's a whole nother situation. What would you have to say about that, Raz?
It blows my mind that someone that's so experienced with marijuana that Vinny described him as, he said, if Chad was home, he was high. Obviously he smoked a lot, you know, according to Vinny. He should have known better that he was grossly over-serving her, stacking the hits to where you can't even see through the bong for someone that has smoked, I think what they said, like around six times her entire life, which is over a span of about 4 years, you're not going to have any tolerance. So the fact that you're giving that to someone that doesn't know what they're doing and is inexperienced, like, even if she didn't go through this psychosis, no good is going to come from that. So you could speculate with that, but no one knows. Well,
it seems like she had her, that this didn't come on right at that moment, that it took a little bit for the psychosis to develop, that she first started feeling like she couldn't breathe and she went to the bathroom and some other things that she was describing that she was conscious of, that if, and he knew that she was having a hard time. But he didn't take Vinny to the emergency room, and he didn't seem to be concerned about taking her to the emergency room, which could have changed things quite a bit if he had called 911 or something. And that's something that I don't understand about people who are around people that have these paranoias, bad trips, and so forth, that they basically think they're going to just sleep it off and they don't really take it seriously. Right. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a... you know, could have changed things if he had.
Yeah. And what if he had gone upstairs and gotten one of his roommates and said, can you help? I mean, she's really having a bad time. I don't know what to do. If there was other people down there, she could have been subdued. You know, it could have changed the whole night, but he let it happen. You know, I'm not blaming the victim. What I am saying, though, is that the complete lack of awareness of the actual harms is what's harming people. And so we have to be sure that everybody knows. So, you know, if somebody's dating someone who uses marijuana, just keep this in mind. And it's not just naive users who are at risk. Christy just made a long list of cases that are similar to Bryn's case, where somebody who has a normal normal, no mental illness, suddenly has a psychotic event where they do something violent. So these were with naive users, but there are experienced users who have had this as well. There was one guy from Canada who he was a regular user, and he ended up cutting off his father's head in front of family and friends, and completely screaming. And it was this horrible, horrible thing. But and he felt horrible afterwards. He had no idea. And he was a regular user of marijuana. And he said, had I known, I wish I had known that it could do this. He was mortified. And so it's the first time users, but it's also the regular users. And
well, it's more likely to be the regular users. That there's this case where they have the first time where naive users or people that don't use it very often, that it sparks some psychosis, but it's more likely to be someone that uses it from a young age and uses it a lot. And then, you know, that triggers a psychotic break, or it could even turn into schizophrenia. And once a person has schizophrenia, they're much more likely to have violent acts, especially if they're continuing using substances, especially using marijuana. So there are cases like that in my research that I've found.
But I just want to support those comments that Heidi and Christy, you just made about it's not just the new naive users. I would say that I am in contact with probably over thousands of families now at this point. It used to be in the hundreds. But I have been in contact with particularly wives that have had husbands that were regular marijuana users throughout their lives. And then they start using the industrialized products, the more potent products, and all of a sudden they're having psychosis and they're schizophrenic. And so it definitely, like where you said, the regular user is at more higher risk because their body, their brain, or whatever the science is behind it is more saturated with it. And I know with the scientists that have educated us, it's just so unpredictable. We do not know how much THC in a person's body, depending on their weight, their age, the maturity of their brain, when that brain will break. And the psychosis either comes on gradually and it's a mild psychosis where they're just pleasantly confused, or it's a full-fledged psychotic break, that what Bryn experienced that night, where she is hallucinating and thinking she's in a totally different world and reacting to that world that's happening in her brain where she's fighting. And so it is such an unpredictable drug.
In a world where marijuana is legal and where people do drink and legally, that she was acting what I consider to be responsibly that night. She was planning to stay overnight with him. She wasn't planning on getting in the car and driving. She was offered something, a drug that she had a really pretty harmless experience with. And let me say, she may be an unreliable narrator, because when she reported to you, she wasn't feeling anything when you guys were camping. And yet she was high because she had eaten the whole bag of chicks. And then you guys started, you know, giggling and everything. So that may have been the same thing that she had with Chad, where she goes, oh, I'm not feeling anything. And maybe she was high, you know, already. And then they just, you know, it ended up getting stacked on top of that. And so, whoa, really, you know, much more. But the point is, you know, she wasn't intending to get in the car. She was spending the night. That's acting relatively responsibly as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And actually, there was a text message that Audrey used against Bryn, which shows her responsibility, when she did text someone saying that she was going to stay the night at Chad's because she drank too much and she can't drive, which is being responsible. Mm-hmm. So she used the text to show Bryn's responsibility, but was somehow spun that against her. But
yeah,
absolutely. I mean, she was very responsible, and by her smoking with someone that she trusted, which is legal in California, I don't think that shows any your responsibility at all.
Yeah, she plans for herself to take care of herself after, not knowing that she could have a full-fledged psychotic break. And the Every Brain Matters community is one of the only communities, and we understand why other organizations only go out, educate youth, but we are one of the only communities out there that says that these products aren't proven safe for adults to use. Bren is an adult. Obviously, she had a very strong hit from that bong that was stacked that night. But we do know that, you know, this has happened to adults with just one swallow of an edible and a couple hits off a THC vape, too. So it's very good points we're making here. And this is going to hopefully be seen in a lot of places so people can understand and make informed decisions, regardless of the legality of the drug, that they are informed that this is a risk. And they can make appropriate decisions and take care of themselves and the people around them if they do decide to take that risk. Raz, I know we've kept you on a long time, and I know this is a important conversation, but I know it's a difficult one. I wanted to know, what were your thoughts when you heard the verdict that the jury found Bren guilty of involuntary manslaughter?
It was an indescribable feeling where it was just so much shock, because, you know, just sitting there and listening to the evidence from both sides, where all of Audrey's evidence is speculation, but then the defense is giving more hard evidence. It blew my mind that they came to this verdict, where I believe Schwartz, who gave the closing arguments, was saying, you know, was kind of informing the jury, like, hey, here's all the reasons why you should find her not guilty. One was the plain trickery of making that second hit so strong, which no one should be taking a hit that strong. And the reason why, which I did a little bit of research, is when you're smoking a bong, it does take a lot of the oxygen out of when you take that hit. And the more smoke that's in there, the more oxygen is going to be taken out. So that's why right away she felt lethargic and was coughing, because there was basically no oxygen in her system for a little bit, because that hit was so potent. You know, the fact that she didn't know what she was doing and that someone so experienced gave her something like that. The fact that she wasn't informed that this happened to his roommate 2 weeks, within 2 weeks prior, said she didn't want more and she was rushed. He said it for her, rushed it over to her, and was saying, hurry up, you need to smoke this or it's getting wasted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say like, oh, she could have said no. Mm-hmm. But again, part of all this was that if a reasonable person had to have seen this as a possible outcome, which no reasonable person or, you know, would have thought that this is a possible outcome. Again, all of her experiences before this were pleasant. No one's going to think, oh, just smoking more could make me get psychosis. And I know they tried comparing this to drinking at one point, which really, there's no comparison. The way that it affects your brain is totally different. And we have all this literature and common knowledge of how alcohol works. We don't have that with marijuana, or else it's not being talked about. Since this has all happened, obviously I've been talking to my friends about it and even clients about it to help cope. And multiple friends or even one of my clients. One of my clients says he was at a dinner party, and one of the women there, a few of them smoked. One of the women there lost her mind and tried killing her husband in front of everyone. They were able to hold her down.
Wow.
But that's something he's never told anyone. He doesn't talk about it. My other friend who said that he smoked, he started seeing things. He ran and just laid in the shower for over an hour. And his girlfriend came in and was like, yeah, we're not going out for the night. You're not right. No one talks about this stuff. Yeah. It's not common knowledge. But, you know, going back to, you know, all the different reasons why they should have come to the conclusion that this was involuntary intoxication. Just so already we know this whole bossy, Bryn being bossy and being in control, that's not true. That's out the window. You could come up with 10 or more scenarios in your mind on what happened that night. But even if one of them has, if you think there's any possibility that any of these reasons we gave you, that she should be found not guilty of voluntary intoxication, then you have to find her not guilty. And the fact that each one of them found her guilty of voluntary intoxication makes no sense at all.
Well, and the thing is that this was, you know, the ending of the prosecutor's narrative about Bryn, which was, you advocate for yourself, don't you? So why was it so hard for you to say no if you really didn't want that second hit? It was only worth, what, $3 or $5, like a cup of coffee. Why couldn't you just say no? And that was her point of view on it. And that's how she was able to, you know, push that one through, I think. Wow.
Right. And another thing is, she doesn't know how much it costs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't, I didn't know that's how much that costs.
There was an expert who came and
right,
said,
I'm saying Bryn didn't know how much it cost.
Right.
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 Like someone that only gets offered marijuana from their friends.
Yeah.
You don't know how much it costs. She's never purchased it. When we went to Washington, I purchased it, and I still don't remember how much it cost. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. And so the fact that she was using that as an argument, like, oh, she wasn't wasting that much money. Obviously, this guy's an avid user. This is important to him. He wouldn't have been going, hurry up and smoke it. You're wasting it.
Yeah.
You know, unless, yeah, I would think like, oh, this is a lot of value. Right. Yeah.
And it's his medicine. Again, he's been ordering it pretty regularly, so he would really not want to waste it because then he's got to order again. So, I mean,
it's such a bizarre behavior that especially that's been normalized here through the industry and these really well-funded campaigns that it's like a normal behavior that bong was stacked with all that potent THC smoke. And well, you better not waste it. You better take it. And then the cost really is a chemical assault to Bryn's brain that night. And then your clients that you described, Raz, too, like their experiences, like do they really understand? Because the normalization of using this drug is so broad and so embedded in our culture and our normal day lives now. I don't think if they understand that is a chemical assault to a brain, like kind of like they do in chemical warfare, you know, and that brain has taken a hit, and it's gonna some brains are gonna recover, not fully, but they'll recover, and it will take a long time, and some brains don't recover; they become permanently in that psychotic state, and convert to that schizophrenia, which is chronic psychosis. So. I know, Raz, too, you mentioned, you know, your friends that have had these experiences, they just get quiet. They don't talk about it because it is so normalized in our culture. And when you come forward and you say it, you're shamed, you're laughed at, people mm-hmm. don't believe you. And, you know, you just want to be part of the conversation. You want to keep good, healthy relationships, and those people that aren't believing you then kind of do a side eye to you, like, oh, they don't believe you that this is something that happens. So I just want to recognize, by you coming here, having this conversation, we hope it's encourages other people that once would not talk about their experiences coming forward and saying, yes, I experienced this too. Yes, I know this is a risk. I know it's harmful. So I want to thank you again for that. I want to know, Raz, where does this go from here? What do you want to see happen with Bryn and then this issue of cannabis-induced psychosis?
I mean, I would like for Bryn to be able to tell her story. I would like for her to be able to educate people, and that's what she wants to do. You know, this is a truly tragic situation, and, you know, my heart goes out to the O'Malley family, right? And, you know, I don't know what you could say, but, and I know Bryn as well, you know, she was told not to reach out by her counsel to the O'Malley family. And I know, and I've seen it firsthand, how this has affected her and how just remorseful she is and how terrible she feels. You know, every time we're ever hanging out with people, and she won't tell this to everyone, but, you know, she'll tell me all the time, like, anytime I may seem happy, I'm faking it. She's like, anytime I'm doing anything, this is all I think about. And there's times where, you know, it's almost like pulling an arm and a leg to try to get her to do anything and try to convince her, like, you can't sit at your house. You can't just sit inside and rot. And I mean, she did do some things to get out. She has been volunteering at two animal shelters just to be able to do something and, you know, occupy herself with something other than just sitting at home. But anytime we could be out, you know, we might go out, do something, and then we get into the car and she just breaks down because it's so exhausting for her to fake being normal around people. Or if we would hang out with like a group of her friends, we get into the car and she just starts crying or she's screaming because she just still cannot believe that she took someone's life, and it eats at her every day. She can't fall asleep at night. She can't sleep. You know, it's hard to see, but at the same time, you know, I don't want to word this the wrong way, but she wants to make sure that this doesn't happen anymore, or try to reduce how often this happens and educate people, because that's, again, the person she is. That's why she chose the career that she chose. She wants to help people. She wants to get the news out there. I'm sure she will be contacting you all and, you know, trying to be some part of what you're doing or write a book. Myself, you know, I'm in full support of that. You know, if there's anything I could do to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone, I mean, that's why I'm here today, you know, not only to speak on Bryn's character, but also it just breaks my heart that something like this happened. And I think people might even be in denial that this is a thing until it affects someone that they care about. Just like when people don't talk about it, again, there's shame behind it. They might think they're getting called like a wuss, or, you know, like, wow, like, that's how it affected you. Like, okay, you know, it's it's with anything that's new, you know, there's going to be a period of time where it's, I think, going to take a while for people to accept that this is a thing. And
or the industry will say, you're trying the wrong product. Come into our pot shop and we'll give you a different product.
Right.
Which is the wrong thing to say, which is what they should say is stop using immediately if you haven't had experience. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, right now, Bren doesn't have a voice in this issue because she, you know, she's going with the direction of her lawyers. And so you coming forward, sharing your perspective, Raz, is the best thing. I mean, you are giving her a bit of a voice today. You know her, you have a personal relationship with her. And so we appreciate that. And we look forward to when Bren is able to share her experience and her, this is just so important. And we are very sorry that this ended in a death. I think the only thing that could make this situation better if Chad was here to tell his story too. But he's not, you know, that was the consequence of this drug.
Yeah. I thought it was great. And I thought, that you did really, really well, Raz. Thank you so much, you know, for sharing as much and sharing your vulnerability too.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, I'm glad to be able to speak on this. And, you know, again, like the fact that this happened to someone I really care about, it makes me more passionate about it. And, you know, I've said this before, like one of my clients who's younger, when I told him about this, and I'm talking about how this happened just from marijuana, and he's like, nah, man, nah, she had to have been drugged. Something else was in it. That's crazy. I can't believe she was drugged. I'm like, no, it was by testing. It was just marijuana. And he's like, nah, something else had to be, but that's crazy. Something else had to have been done though. And I'm like, no, that it was just marijuana. You know, this could happen. This is a thing. But
that's an example of the power of propaganda. Mm-hmm. That is an example of the power of this industry and the stronghold that the marijuana industry has on the culture and the beliefs of the populace. They have really fooled people. And it's, you know, when I hear what you described, that young man is in denial, mm-hmm. fear just bubbles up inside of me, you know, because they don't believe that there's this risk that can turn into psychosis from using marijuana. And so he might be more liberal with it and experience with it and not call for help if it happens to a friend of his. And
right.
I mean, I hear it over and over again. As a matter of fact, I have people that were close in my life that I don't have relationships with anymore because they don't believe it either. And I'm like, well, mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop doing what I do. Because this is very important information that needs to get out there. So thank you for sharing that. It's really horrible, the power that this industry has had over our beliefs, our political system. And I think that's one last question, if you don't mind. Raz, would you like to see more lawsuits from Bren's family and the O'Malley family to come forth? Do you think that's maybe a solution to some of this misinformation that's out there?
Would I like to see more lawsuits?
Yeah, maybe against the industry or the people that sold the product or the fact that California declined putting warning labels on their products.
So actually, real quick, if I could touch on, this is something I wanted to mention is, I didn't get to finish this point earlier, that the illicit site had the warning label. That it was very potent and there could be side effects, you know, and they were covering their own butts. And that company's no longer in, they're out of business. It doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, so absolutely, yeah, I think that the industry needs to answer. You know, I think there needs to be regulations, just like in Illinois. If a bartender overserves someone too much alcohol, and they go out and they commit a crime, that bar is held responsible, or they hold some responsibility. I think that it should be the same thing with marijuana, especially if you're supplying an inexperienced, naive user with marijuana and you grossly overserve them. There should be some consequences to that. And as far as I know, there isn't. So even if, again, if she didn't go through psychosis and it was just, she had some other kind of negative side effect, and who knows what happens after that with, you know, unconscious woman. But, you know, for cases like that, am I saying that this was the case here, but, you know, the people supplying the marijuana, especially if they're not telling them, hey, this is really strong, and I'm also on top of that going to make it even stronger the way I'm going to serve you it, you know, there should be some responsibility that falls on them. So absolutely, I think someone needs to answer to this. And I absolutely think it's the industry and the government. They need to put, again, more regulations in place to hold the right people responsible, especially for not giving these warnings. Mm-hmm. Like, just like and you said, in Illinois, they start putting it up in the pot shops. That's not mm-hmm. enough. That's not no. enough. No. You can't just
but
put
it's
a
more...
sign in a building. Right. It's a step.
Yeah.
Right. But there, it needs to be on the labels, or you get a leaflet or something mm-hmm. every time you order, not just one time, every time you order. And mm-hmm. people should have to educate people about it. Say, mm-hmm. hey, listen, you could get hallucinations. This could happen. Because mm-hmm. the fact is that it's this knowledge is so new. We know what happens with alcohol. We know what happens with other more talked about hard drugs, mm-hmm. right? No one knows about this with marijuana. I didn't know about it. Bryn didn't know about it. Chad saw it happen to his friend 2 weeks prior, but probably still couldn't really grasp what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, probably was again thinking, oh, it's just bad trip, mm-hmm. whatever.
And I think I can speak for Heidi to add to this. The industry and has been so regulation resistant mm-hmm. that we are hoping that lawsuits come forward. Yeah, mm-hmm. money, right? Because of yeah. But we are hoping that there are more and more lawsuits that come forth to demand to make them put those warning labels, and that the government does start doing public service announcements and robust educational campaigns, because most of the educational campaigns have been way too soft. Like, you know, when COVID hit, we heard all these things about COVID and it was everywhere and everybody got the information, but you don't hear nothing about marijuana. We need to right. have public service announcements saying there is a high risk of cannabis-induced psychosis. It is not rare. It is becoming more and more common, especially with this really hard industrialized products that we have legalized in states. And so, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, the lawsuits mandate that these right. types of things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And the witness for the prosecution, psychiatrist Dr. Chris Mohandi said that in California, it was rolled out without much thought to public health or protection.
Very true.
That's the prosecution. So we need public health education. I mean, well, Chad O'Melia and Bryn Spacier are paying the price for it.
Well, and everybody
and
around
whole family.
And families and friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can feel the trauma from Raz,
yes,
the way he describes. I mean, he wasn't mm-hmm. even there that day. This is traumatizing. You can tell the emotional toll it's taken on him too. But in Ohio, I said, I asked the legislators, I'm like, for more protections before this marijuana bomb is detonated on Ohio families, because that's what it feels like. It's this boom, and then it just, the ripple effect to the trauma. I mean, my whole family's traumatized. And
when, after finding out about all this, like I couldn't sleep at all. I couldn't concentrate at work. It was to the point where the guy that owns the gym came up to me and he's like, "You're about to get fired. What's going on?"
Oh,
and I told him what happened, and I think he was a little understanding. And this point, we still didn't know about psychosis or anything. So I knew another one of my friends that made edibles, and I bought some from him, and he would tell me like, "Hey, don't take much, you know, they're strong." So before bed, I would just take it just to sleep, not knowing like, man, something else could happen anytime having it. And that was honestly the last time I have ever had any kind of marijuana.
Say, I'm so glad Bryn survived this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Right, like hearing and seeing the pictures, you know, of her in the hospital, it's a miracle that she did. And that cop, that police officer that applied the pressure, you know, I wish I could thank him.
Stay tuned for part 5 of the Bryn Spacer trial, where we interview another friend of Bryn's. Help us raise awareness of cannabis-induced psychosis by subscribing to our YouTube channel or podcast. Visit us at everybrainmatters.org